It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're going to talk about homework. Some kids find it frustrating. Others feel like it's busy work. And many parents don't know whether to help or get out of the way. Today, we'll talk about how homework has changed over the years, what kind of homework is valuable, what kind seems to be a waste of time, and we'll find out how involved parents should be. You're welcome to join the conversation this hour with your questions, with your stories, your concerns. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today is Joy Walker. She is the K-12 math curriculum coordinator for Iowa City Schools. She also teaches honors pre-calculus at West High in Iowa City. Good morning, Joy.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Deb Leinberger is also here. She's associate professor of education at the University of Iowa. Deb, thanks for coming back to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Haley Malis is also with us. She's an English teacher at Roosevelt High School in Des Moines. Hello, Haley.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
I'm happy to be here.
And I think we see a lot about homework in written about it in different articles. We hear a lot of complaining from parents, from students. And there are some vast generalizations that are made about how homework has changed over the years and the homework load that students have today. And of course, it varies pretty dramatically from school to school. But let's look back 30 years or so, and then compare to today. Has the homework load increased over that time, Joy?
I don't know that it's so much increased, but I would say that it's probably a little bit different in nature. I recall, and I'm old enough to have done homework 30 years ago, I feel like a lot of it was just sort of repetitive practice of two or three or four, whatever new concepts were taught that day. And personally, I didn't mind doing it, but I guess I liked math. But I think today's homework is a little bit more carefully crafted. I think teachers are trained a little bit more to be a little bit selective about that homework and also to be purposeful about assigning it and you know, what they want students to gain from it and so forth. So I do think that there's a little bit more thought put into it.
What do you think, Deb?
Well, according to time estimates, since about the 80s, homework time and studying time has been increasing, and the biggest increases have actually been with the youngest kids. So the 6 to 8-year-olds are spending more time per week, roughly about 2 hours per week doing some kind of studying, homework kinds of things. So it has been increasing, and it tends to follow different shifts, and there are the nature of it, as Joy was describing, is different than what it used to be. And this has been sort of a cyclical thing. So prior to the 20th century, it was more drill-based, and then it sort of shifted to problem-solving. And then in the 50s with Sputnik and the Russians, it shifted back to being more drill, and we needed to do this more. And then it began to shift again. And of late, in the early 2000s, there's been talk again about what kind of homework are we doing too much. But the biggest shift since the 80s has been with the youngest kids.
And with the youngest kids, I don't know if the information you looked at really broke this down, but having young kids myself, there is a daily assignment to read with your child. And of course, that's something that was really taken for granted, I think, for many years, either that people would read with their child or wouldn't read with their child. But now that is part of a daily assignment. Would that be included in this idea of homework?
Yes, it would. And reading times have been going up as well. So there are increases even since 1997 in the amount of time kids are spending reading, which is fantastic. So, yes, generally that is included in the 6 to 8.
All right. And reading is one of the things that we do know impacts a child's test scores, whether they are read to as a child or whether they read independently. That's one of those areas of homework that we actually has statistically been shown to improve a child's performance, right?
Absolutely. Reading undergirds every academic domain. So it's definitely one of the most important things that parents can do with their kids.
Haley, do you want to weigh in on this as well from your observations?
Sure. I graduated from high school in 2001. And so I would say that the work that I see most students needing to complete for homework at the high school level is fairly comparable to the work that I was expected to complete. I do think that one of the factors that maybe needs to be taken into account is maybe a stronger push at the high school level for college readiness and college preparatory work. And so I think it's more specific maybe and more narrowly scoped than maybe it had been in the past.
Well, let's talk about the purpose of homework assigned, because Haley, you're an English teacher and you teach a number of AP courses, right?
I do. I teach AP Lit and Comp.
All right. So when you're teaching AP Lit, mm-hmm. I have a feeling that you have to assign reading.
Yes.
There's really no way around it, right?
Yes. Yes.
So the purpose of that kind of homework seems pretty clear. Deb and Joy, let's talk about the purpose of homework. And I don't know, Joy, if you know much about the homework assigned for elementary students, but I think that you do. All right. So the purpose of homework assigned in elementary school, what tend to be the different categories? We've already talked about reading. What are some of the other things that elementary students are asked to do as homework?
Well, I actually spoke with one of our MARS team, which is Math Area Resource Specialist teams, and because I was a little bit curious about that as well. And I know that with the current program that we use in Iowa City, parents often are given a sheet that outlines the kinds of concepts that the students have been working on, and perhaps even a little bit about how it was taught, and then even an answer key to the problems that the student has been sent home with. And so maybe a couple or three times a week, this kind of thing goes home, and parents are encouraged to help students. I don't think it's an absolute requirement that they do that, but it's certainly an option and a way for parents to monitor what's going on. And, of course, if the student is struggling, it's certainly nice if there can be some help at home. So I think there's a lot of effort made, and also maybe some online resources for parents to use regarding homework. So honestly, when I was a little kid, we didn't have any homework until about fifth or sixth grade, and then you were grown up because you had homework.
Right.
And so this idea of having homework, you know, for such youngsters is fairly new, I think. But yes, that is an integral part all the way down. Is my understanding is all the way to first grade and perhaps even kindergarten on some level.
From my personal experience, sometimes I feel like the homework is almost less an assignment for my child as communication with me as a parent. Do you think that there's some of that this is a link between the classroom at home, making sure that the parents know what the child is doing at school?
Oh, I think absolutely, because many of the procedures and strategies and so forth that are taught to our elementary students are quite different from what parents may have grown up with. And so if you don't, as a parent, understand what your child is doing, it's a little rough trying to help them with it and can be quite frustrating for everybody involved. So I think the purpose of sending home a printed some sort of information that tells what's going on, I think, is an attempt to get the parents to understand what's going on and give them a little bit more to work with in terms of helping their children.
Well, and I think we're treading into territory where we should probably talk a little bit about the math curriculum, because of course different school districts have different math curriculums, but these things have been popping up online where a parent will pull a math problem and complain about how it's being solved in a way that we never would have been taught 30 years ago, and not understanding why we're doing that. A lot of parents struggle with the math curriculum, everyday math, which seems to be in a lot of different school districts. And then there are also a lot of people who are complaining that this is a problem with the Common Core. Now, the Common Core doesn't dictate what math curriculum is supposed to be used in a school, right?
No, it doesn't dictate that you have to use this publisher's program or that one, but it does dictate what concepts and skills should be mastered at certain grade levels. And so a program like Everyday Math is a little bit different from that, because Common Core specifies by the end of grade 3 you need to do thus and such, whereas the Everyday Math program, it operates on a spiral approach, meaning that you revisit the same topic many times so that a student gets repeated exposures to it, and even over a span of a few years before mastery occurs. And so they aren't quite at all, they aren't really the same thing at all. And I think as publishers adjust to the the Common Core requirements that they have to adjust their programs as well. So I think probably you'll see some changes soon in the, you know, we're undergoing math curriculum review in Iowa City next year, and we will be looking at some brand new programs that are, you know, that are published since the advent of the Common Core. So they're going to look a little different.
And with a program like Everyday Math, that reflects a change in how math is taught to elementary school students in particular. And can you explain the focus? I mean, that this is a larger focus on creativity than on...
Right. It's based on constructivist notions of education, and that would be best explained, I guess, by saying that each of us needs to construct our own meaning and our own understanding of, for example, subtraction and so forth. And so rather than have the teacher get up and explicitly explain this is how you subtract, students are allowed to grapple with a subtraction problem and to figure out some ways in which they might, you know, be able to find the answer to whatever is the problem at hand. And so that approach is quite different than, you know, what most parents have gone through as children. And so I think that's what makes Everyday Math and there are other programs that are similar. Right. That's what makes them so different.
And what is the problem that these curriculums were designed to solve?
Well, I think wanting students to do more thinking, to do more creative, be more creative, and to deeply understand things in a conceptual basis, not just a rote skill type, what is perceived to be shallow understanding, but a much more deeper conceptual understanding.
All right. We're talking about homework today on Talk of Iowa. We'll continue our conversation in just a few minutes. I'm talking with Joy Walker, who is K through 12 math curriculum coordinator for Iowa City Schools. Haley Malis is with us. She's an English teacher at Roosevelt High School in Des Moines. And Deb Leinberger, associate professor of education at the University of Iowa. We'll be back in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
I got 36 eggs, and I took them in the house, and I put them in boxes. Six eggs each, six boxes.
Oh, six times six is 36. Six times six.
Going to the candy store. I take six of these and six of those and six of them and six of the others and also six of the red and six of the white and six of the blue. I put them in one bag. That's 42.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about homework on Talk of Iowa, how things have changed over the years, what kind of homework is actually valuable to our kids, and what kind of homework may not be very valuable, how involved parents should be. With me is Deb Leinberger, associate professor of education at the University of Iowa, Haley Malis, an English teacher at Roosevelt High School in Des Moines, and Joy Walker, K through 12 math curriculum coordinator for Iowa City Schools and honors pre-calculus teacher at West High as well. And you are welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're going to get to the phones here in just a moment. Before we do that, Deb, before in the first segment of the show, we were talking about how reading homework, reading to your children is part of homework in elementary school and the value of that. What do we know about math homework and how valuable that is in elementary school?
In terms of looking at the relationships between different kinds of homework and achievement, math seems to have a bigger effect on elementary school levels of achievement, mainly because reading is so embedded everywhere else. So there's, you know, you have benefits from assigning reading homework specifically, but kids are doing it across a variety of different contexts. So math seems to have a pretty strong relationship with achievement for elementary school kids. Although in elementary school, even the relationships sort of generally between homework and achievement are pretty close to zero, mainly because it's more about time management and beginning to learn study skills than it is so much about enhancing achievement. And what Joy talked about in terms of helping parents to understand what their kids are doing at school.
All right. And to return to that subject, Joy, we have posted on our Facebook page a math problem that went viral. It was shared over many, many, many platforms. And this was a fairly simple subtraction problem, 427 minus 316. But it was a little bit of a story problem, and it shows number line work and a student's work. It says, Jack used the number line below to solve 427 minus 316, find his error, then write a letter to Jack telling him what he did right and what he should do to fix his mistake. Now, of course, using the kind of subtraction that all of us learned 30 years ago, it's a very simple problem because the answer is 111. and you can solve it very quickly. And that's a parent wrote a letter to Jack, and it says, "Dear Jack, don't feel bad. I have a Bachelor of Science degree in electronics engineering, which included extensive study in differential equations and other higher math applications. Even I cannot explain the Common Core mathematics approach, nor get to the answer correctly. In the real world, simplification is valued over complication. Therefore, 427 minus 316 equals 111. The answer is solved in under 5 seconds. The process used is ridiculous and would result in termination if used. Sincerely, frustrated parent." So again, this went all over the place. And this is something that plays into the Common Core, though. Can you explain why we would be learning this problem in this way?
Well, sure. Among the Common Core standards are I believe there are 8 standards for mathematical practice. And one of those is called critiquing reasoning or the reasoning of others. And this problem, to me, is not really about how do you subtract. And as a matter of fact, I'm sure it was engineered so that the person who has to explain why Jack has the wrong answer needs to easily know what the correct answer is. So that's why that one is so obviously simple to do. But I think I think that maybe whoever was unhappy about this posted it slightly out of context because, again, I don't think anybody's going to pretend that this is how you ought to go about subtracting. However, subtraction is an operation that's very nicely modeled on the number line. I'm not necessarily saying 3-digit subtraction, but the idea is you count backwards by hundreds and then you count backwards by tens and then by ones depending on what you're going to subtract. And so the point I think of the worksheet is for the student just to simply find an error, which in and of itself is a great skill to have, to critique errors of others or for that matter your own. It's a very valuable skill.
And even the parent who wrote this letter has followed up and said his child is autistic and gifted in math and very easily came up with this answer but couldn't do the writing assignment that came along with it. So his child loves math, fears writing assignments, and this was a very frustrating experience for both of them.
Oh, sure. And it's a difficult thing to critique reasoning, and particularly when someone's doing it in a way that you don't want to do it that way or you don't think that's the best way to do it in the first place, then there's that judgment in there on top of you're trying to critique someone's reasoning. So, I mean, I understand that.
So you teach pre-calculus.
Right.
Everyday math has been in place for some time in Iowa City. From a teacher's perspective, is it working?
I think, you know, the students that I get come pretty well prepared because they're at the top level. They're very good in all of their skills, or they wouldn't be in that class in the first place. But I have taught at other levels at West High as well. And I would say that computation skills in general are not as good as they used to be a couple of decades ago. Perhaps that's a result. It probably goes back to about 1989 when the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics issued their curriculum and evaluation standards. And there was some language in there about de-emphasizing paper and pencil type computation. And of course, the minute people see de-emphasize, it means don't do or do very little and so on and so on. So I think over time, there has been a bit of fallout from that. But with the advent of handheld calculators and computers and other kinds of technology, I think that, you know, we need to spend some time on those things too. And I think the thing that maybe takes a slight backseat to some of that has been computation. And unfortunately, and when you teach algebra, computation needs to be flawless. Certainly at the pre-calculus level, it has to be very, very good. And not just any old computation, but standard algorithm computation, such as long division and such as standard multiplication, because we do things with variables that mirror that same process, particularly long division. And so if students aren't really knowledgeable and have mastery of those kinds of skills, and that can get in the way at those higher levels.
We have a number of people on the line who would like to join this conversation. And of course, all of us have experience with homework at one level or another. Carrie is on the line in Wilton. Hello, Carrie.
Hello.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
I want to introduce the idea of technology integration, specifically flipping the classroom. And in the old model, the students go to a room with a chalkboard and receive a lecture from a human being who may not be having their best day. And then they go away with a book and paper and pencil, and they do the task. And the new opportunity is to have them, at the time that the student is most effective, see the best example of the lecture or an example of the lecture that's modified for them, and see that on a video screen. And then they come into the classroom with the other students and with the teacher, and they do the task work in the room together.
All right. And Carrie, this is an idea that you would advocate?
Well, I think it needs to be in the toolbox. I think that when we get a new technology, we pretend to use it for 30 years, and then the people who were trained without it retire, and then we actually begin to use it. And I don't think we need to wait 30 years to do something new with homework.
All right, Carrie, thanks a lot for your comments. And would anybody feel comfortable responding to that? Haley?
So I think that this is a big push in education, and I think that the concept works really beautifully if students have equal opportunity to access that technology outside of the classroom. And I do incorporate aspects of it when I am giving feedback to students on their writing. I use a program called Jing, and it's a screencast program where students submit their rough draft of their paper to me electronically, and I can take a screenshot of my computer and record feedback over the top so that they can hear my voice and they can hear my tone. And then they can listen to it again and again. I think some of the benefit of using kind of a flip mode is that students can revisit it, that they can pause and go back and listen again if there's something that they didn't catch the first time. And so that's replacing that face-to-face conversation that would take time in the classroom in terms of conferencing with students about their writing. But I do think that sometimes we think that technology is so available to our students that we don't always see those who may struggle a little bit to have access at home. So there are definite benefits to it. I think teachers need more training in how to effectively do that.
Now, Haley, you bring up something interesting with that point, the idea that a student who didn't catch something the first time could revisit it again and again on their own. Now, one of the things that people complain about with homework is that students aren't doing it anyway. So, I mean, the idea of a student being so driven to get something right that they would revisit a video presentation or an audio recording of their teacher's feedback more than once, is that a bit of a stretch, do you think?
It probably depends on the course. I will say that my students who receive feedback in that way say that it's one of the most beneficial things. They go back and listen again and again, because I think in order for feedback to be effective, for anything that we do in our classrooms to be effective, students need to have buy-in. They need to understand why what we're doing is important. And to tie to that idea of homework, why do they need to do this work outside of class? What benefit will it give them? And I think that if teachers are really intentional about that, and if students can clearly see how it's going to benefit them, they will.
And you have seen a tremendous difference between the response to homework, buy-in as far as homework goes, between the advanced placement classes that you teach and other English courses, right?
Yeah.
So give me compare and contrast. I mean, how many of your AP students are doing their homework, actually reading all those books you send home with them?
Well, I just polled them yesterday to make sure that I wasn't living in some delusional state. And they told me on average, probably 85 to 90%
okay.
of them are coming to class with the homework completed. But I think that the reasoning behind that is because they know that we're going to use it. The homework that they do is not extra practice. The homework that they do drives what happens in the classroom the next day. And there's a lot of ownership placed on students that it's their responsibility to make meaning. I could lecture on and on about, you know, what I found in the text, but it doesn't matter. It matters that they're able to read and analyze and make meaning, build those connections, and articulate it and support it.
So how do you think that compares to students who are not in advanced placement courses?
I think ultimately, and I'm sure that many will disagree with me, but I think ultimately what's going to help a student in an advanced course to be successful is their work ethic. I think they might come in with different skill sets, but it's ultimately that desire to improve, to set aside time to learn and grow, that makes the difference. But I think the same does hold true for those students in, you know, the general education courses, that if they see it being authentic and valuable and purposeful, that they will make the time to do it.
So let's draw a distinction, and I'd like Joy, I'd really like you to weigh in on this as well. And Deb, not just from your experience doing research, but your experience as a mother as well. So Haley's talking about, let's say, a lit course where to even follow along in class, really reading the book makes a huge difference. You see the result of what you do for your homework on a day-to-day basis. How about some of the other kinds of homework we send home, for example, worksheets, et cetera? Are kids seeing a connection between what they do on a worksheet at home and what they do in class on a day-to-day basis, Joy?
Well, so often, at least in math, what we do is sequential. So if you don't have full mastery of yesterday's material, then it's going to be a little bit tough to move forward and use that in a more sophisticated way than you used it yesterday. So I think homework certainly serves the purpose of making sure that concepts are well understood before we move forward. I also feel like a lot of the learning in my class takes place as we go over homework. And because if students haven't fought with it and hit some sort of a point where they're at an impasse as to move forward, if you don't struggle a little bit, you don't learn how to unstick yourself, so to speak. And so a lot of that kind of thing happens when we go over homework. So I think it's also part of the learning process and teaching process.
Deb?
As a mom with kids between 6 and 20, I can say when my oldest was in high school, the amount of homework and the level of frustration, and he's a really bright kid, very problematic. So this was a kid who had been successful all throughout, and in 9th and 10th grade, the amount that he would have from each class was simply overwhelming, and he just tuned out. And while I could see, you know, an individual assignment, say in a history class or in an English class, was a really cool assignment, when you have really cool assignments across 6 different subject areas that require an hour or more per night to do, it's just simply too much. And, you know, research would back that up. The optimal amount for a high school student is between 90 minutes and 2.5 hours a day. And when it gets above that limit, that's when you start to see pretty dramatic declines in the relationship between homework and achievement. So it was just too much for him. And it wasn't until and he was good at studying and his skills were strong. It wasn't until later in high school that he, when the load got dramatically lessened, that he became incredibly engaged in a couple of AP classes that to this day he still talks about as some of his favorites.
And why did the load get dramatically lessened? Was this a school policy change?
I think it's more that in they really go nuts in this particular school district outside of Philadelphia with homework in 9th and 10th grade. It's sort of expected that that's really when you've got to get working. And then by junior and senior year, there's also the shift to you begin taking classes you want to take. And he's an economics and political science major at the university here. And those are the courses he absolutely loved and was able to pursue with more rigor.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about homework this hour on Talk of Iowa. With me, Deb Leinberger, Associate Professor of Education at the University of Iowa. Joy Walker, K-12 Math Curriculum Coordinator for Iowa City Schools and Honors Pre-Calc Teacher at West High. And Haley Malis, an English teacher at Roosevelt High School in Des Moines. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about homework, and we're going to focus now on parental involvement in homework. A lot of parents don't know whether they should help, whether they should get out of the way. Some parents help a lot. Some parents don't help at all. Let's talk about what we can do and what we should be doing as parents to help our children out. You can give us a call with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post on our Facebook page. With me, Haley Malis, an English teacher at Roosevelt High School in Des Moines, Joy Walker, K-12 Math Curriculum Coordinator for Iowa City Schools, and Deb Leinberger, Associate Professor of Education at the University of Iowa. Before we delve too deeply into that, we have a couple of people who've waited very patiently on the phone. Dick is on the line in Solon. Hi, Dick.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm wondering what your panelists think about grading homework, and then as a follow-on, using those grades as a student's input to their class grade.
All right, Dick, thanks a lot. That's a really interesting subject because, of course, homework can really help some people understand what's going on. But is that something that should count on their grade? Haley, what do you think?
Well, you know, there's been a real movement away from evaluating anything that is really just a behavior. And so the way that my grade book is set up is that we have formative assessments and we have summative assessments. And formative assessments are essentially all of those pieces, all that process work, the practice, so to speak. And then it all contributes to this final product. And so the way that my grade book is set up is that 20% of their grade is the daily work, is the homework, is that kind of thing. And 80% is the end of unit test, the writing pieces that really speaks to their mastery of the skills that we've been working on. So the way that I treat homework is that it's the springboard for the work that we do in the classroom. But the stuff that they need to be practicing in order to be active participants, but it doesn't carry a tremendous amount of weight in the grade book.
Joy?
Well, I think having students hand in homework that where the concept was just taught yesterday, and you know that it's not an easy concept, I think it's unreasonable to expect everybody to hand in flawless homework the next day. So I think there has to be some reasonability on what you can expect your students to be able to do. I mean, you can certainly look at it for completion. You can spot check a couple of problems and see whether or not things are going well. If you have them handed in a couple days after you've gone over it, did they follow up with corrections that you know you did in class and that sort of thing? I mean, you can get a little bit of a glimpse into their habits as students and so forth when you look at it. But I think you have to be careful not to judge it harshly, particularly when the concept is new and or difficult without giving them plenty of time. You can think of it as a kind of a quiz if you wait a couple of days after you've, you know, gone over it and so forth. But yeah, I think you have to be really careful.
One of the things that has changed dramatically in the last 30 years are the amount of extracurricular activities available to kids. Do you have to take that a little bit into account? I mean, so-and-so has a soccer tournament. They didn't get that homework done right then. What do you think about that,
Joy? Absolutely. And mostly my students are quite good at doing their homework on a regular basis. So unless someone is what I call a habitual offender, I tend not to be harsh about that. If somebody was in a play over the weekend and just had zero time to do homework, or somebody had a track meet many miles away and didn't get home till midnight, of course I understand there are times, there are going to be nights when it just isn't going to happen. And I think that it's more important to make sure that you give them some incentive to do it. you know, that, okay, so if it was, if it happened that that was going to be worth 5 points and you didn't get around to it last night, give them a couple of days to get that back again and not just let it go, right?
Not so, make it punitive.
Absolutely, because these kids are busy.
Craig is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Craig.
Hi. One thing that I found that really helps is to, in math, is to teach the children to understand why things are happening, like teaching them to work problems backwards and forwards, and it just creates tremendous insight and gives them a lot more self-confidence because they see things that they wouldn't otherwise, and also incorporating the four dominant learning styles and maybe even the four basic personality types, maybe adjusting the assignment. And then if, when there's extremely, I hate to say this, but when there's extremely excessive homework, maybe the parents ought to consider taking the school district to court because it can emotionally and psychologically damage a child. So that's what I wanted to share.
All right, Craig, thanks a lot for making that point. And there have been stories of kids who have just truly excessive amounts of homework. I don't know if litigation is the answer, but but do you see parents getting involved when the load seems to be really unreasonable?
I think it has depended a bit upon where the child was in the school and how grade level wise. And I know when my son's homework shot up and I would go into conferences and speak with teachers, there were points where I said, this seems like it's excessive, you know, between all of the different classes that he's in, he's really struggling. And is there anything that you can do about it? And they would usually say, not really. This is what needs to be covered. And every class would say, this is what needs to be covered. And so it became for him and many of his classmates who were like a cohort going through these all these same classes together, sort of a rite of passage, which was disappointing because it basically turned him off. And at some points, he was bringing up his homework grade by his performance on exams, which seems kind of backward
right
to me.
Now, there was recently an article that was published in The Atlantic with a very controversial title, Don't Help Your Kids with Their Homework, is what it said. So let's talk about parental involvement. I have a friend who read that and said, okay, I won't. And of course, his daughter's three. And I said, well, good luck with that. I think you may find yourself being a little more involved than that. But Deb, what kind of involvement should parents have with their kids and their homework?
Well, it's a little bit more complicated than a simple answer. It depends upon the developmental level of the kid. It depends upon the kinds of help you're trying to give. And it depends upon the subject matter. So developmentally speaking, it's better to help out early in their career because when you're an elementary school student, you have limited cognitive ability to sort of have good study skills and your time management. If you're my children, your time management's usually pretty bad, as well as your organization. And I take full responsibility for some of that. So helping them begin to manage that in a way is very useful. Now, middle school, you have crazy hormones going on, and middle school, anyone who's a middle school teacher, I always say when I'm teaching, I highly admire them because that's one of the most challenging ages. And that's usually when you see a lot of parental involvement in homework being negative. And then when you transition into high school, those kids, when a parent has particular kinds of expertise, that actually can be a beneficial relationship because the parent's able to share their kind of expertise. Now, I did that a bit with my son in calculus. And Wolfram's Alpha was my friend to do a lot of refreshing and everything. But sort of consistently across the age levels, some of the key things are if you have rules about where and when homework is done and you have clear and consistent guidelines, that's a really big positive effect of parental involvement. So it goes on to predict better levels or higher levels of achievement. Providing direct aid, as long as it's seen as not controlling, is also really important. It's when that parents get involved and it's more controlling, more monitoring. Did you do your homework? You know, sort of constantly getting on them. That's when you start to see some negative associations with involvement. And then subject matter-wise, parental involvement in math, again, is really key if parents can understand it.
Well, and that's the next question. I mean, especially with math homework. This is a question from Eric in Ames. My daughter, eighth grade, occasionally has questions about problems on her homework. Now, this is a little bit of a sidebar. We'll dig into the knowledge of math a little bit more in a second. But he says, I use various math every day, but often I need to refresh my understanding by reading the online text from the chapter. I ask her if she's read it, and she states that they don't read the text. Is this a new standard, or am I being taken for a ride?
I don't think that's – it depends on whose standard you're talking about. But, you know, I remember even back in my college days, people didn't read the textbook. And after – it was a wealth of knowledge if you really actually started to read it. So I think sometimes teachers have to remind students that, you know what, we really do expect you to read this material and point out that, you know, okay, I did these examples in class today, but the author of your book has presented several more that are on the – you know, that are similar. And that's another source of information. So, yeah, it gets hard when parents can't. Or worse yet, the parent knows how to do the problem, but in a way that wasn't necessarily addressed
and
in class.
That's a frustrating problem, especially for a lot of elementary school parents.
Absolutely.
Because they bring home these math assignments where they've been taught to solve things in very different ways. And the number columns are called different things than they were called when I was a kid. And that can be very difficult for parents. And sometimes I have felt like maybe I'm getting in the way. You know, I can teach you how to do that subtraction, but I can only teach you one way.
Right. And I think at this point in time, a lot of students are asked to think about subtraction in a lot of different ways and ways that their parents didn't. I mean, even the distance between two numbers on the number line is found by subtraction. And kind of we knew that once we got a little bit older. But these are pretty young children that are working on that type of a concept. And it is kind of an abstraction that can be difficult. So I think to the extent that parents can help their children, it's a wonderful thing. But I really do get concerned about students who may be struggling and who have parents who either can't or aren't available somehow to help students. And I don't know how to address that other than that I hope that the success of any particular program does not depend on that component, because I think we're putting a bunch of students at risk for having struggles.
And even parents who are available. I mean, Deb went back and relearned some calculus so she could help her son out. Not all of us have those kinds of skills to fall back on. And teaching pre-calc students, I'm sure you see that, where some parents are a tremendous help to their students.
Absolutely.
And others can't.
And I do, you know, getting back to it's not quite a flipped classroom, but I have certainly directed my students to a Khan Academy video or some kind of a video that I found that, you know what, this one right here, this particular one does a pretty good job of explaining if you need to see round two of how this works. You might check that out. Or if you're going to be absent for a school trip or whatever, it's really nice to have. That's a resource we didn't have just a few years ago. So it's really wonderful that we can provide that kind of help, too, in the event that you have a student who maybe has parents who don't know.
Hey, I wonder if we can maybe restructure our idea of what it means for a parent to be able to help a student on their homework. Because ultimately, I think that the reason that homework is so vitally important is because it provides students the opportunity to grapple with complex material, to, you know, struggle with ambiguity, to come to their own conclusions, and to be able to engage in the process of learning outside of the teacher. How do they teach themselves to learn? And if instead of, because I don't know how I passed my math classes, it's very hard for me. There's no way I could possibly help, you know, my four-year-old when he starts doing math. But if I invite him to dialogue about what he does know and the things that make sense to him and prompt him, or, you know, if parents prompt their students to talk through their ideas rather than parents trying to control and give them the answer and do it for them, if we can maybe shift our focus a little bit to help that dialogue and that thinking process to reveal our own process, I think that might be incredibly powerful for students.
Oh, and I agree completely. Completely.
I think I would add or caution in that regard, though, when kids get up into high school and they have – I would love to, you know, have a conversation with my son about calculus or some of these other concepts. But we run out of time to do that when it's midnight and he's been doing homework since 8 o'clock. And, you know, I think, you know, then he has to be up at 6 for school. I do that kind of thing with the younger kids, which I think is fantastic. But the older kids, sometimes you just have to get the things done.
Well, and I do think maybe one thing to think about, too, with all of these students, especially at the high school level, who have so much homework. I think that we really need to be mindful in education about balance. And just because advanced placement courses are offered across the board does not mean that we can expect students to be able to manage it all and to do extracurriculars and to work and to have a social life and all of those things if they're taking 7, maybe 8 advanced placement courses. And that maybe we need to find a way to help students to make those decisions too.
And do you work with other teachers, Haley, to manage that course load at all? Because, I mean, I know that your class is the most important thing to you. And a lot of parents have complained about the fact that this certain teacher seems to think that this mm-hmm. is the only homework that their child will have.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, my students in AP Lit are seniors, and the vast majority of them are also taking AP Government. And, you know, often they're taking AP Calc, and they usually have 2 or 3 other AP courses on top of it. And it does become difficult, especially when we're on a block schedule, because that's kind of what I'm dealing with. You know, every other week I only see my students for 3 hours. That's it. And so they have to do the work outside of class, the reading and the preparation, so that we can cover the material. And I know that's kind of opening another can of worms, but I think students desperately need to learn time management, and they don't always know how to use their free time. So while many of my students at that senior level have 3 or 4 AP courses, they might only have 5 courses total in their schedule because they have these release blocks. Are they using those release blocks to complete homework or not? And I know that's certainly not the case with everyone, but it does become difficult to make sure that students can be successful. If we have large projects and things like that, we try to dialogue with each other, you know, the other teachers that we know students are sharing. But it does become difficult.
Haley, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Haley Malis is an English teacher at Roosevelt High School in Des Moines. And Joy, you look like you want to have the final word on that. Yeah, just a couple.
Well, just to respond about the AP classes, I think we needed to guide our students carefully not to overload themselves, because that can certainly create stress that they aren't able to deal with. And I think we just have to be very careful not to let them overload themselves.
Joy Walker, thank you.
Thank you.
Joy Walker is K-12 math curriculum coordinator for Iowa City Schools. And Deb Leinberger, thank you.
Thank you.
Deb Leinberger is an associate professor of education at the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa.
We will rest upon the ground and look at all the bugs we found. Safely walk to school without a sound. Safely walk to school without a sound. Here we are, no one else. We walk to school all by ourselves. There's dirt on our uniforms from chasing all the ants and worms.